are you?
Hey, Don, how you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
So it's, of course, a pleasure to talk to you, and I know that it's probably crazy for you to fathom, but it's been 50 years since American Pie came out.
I can't believe it. You know that?
I would imagine. I mean, 50 years, and you've done so much in your career, and it's not just about American Pie. There's so many other things that you've done. Castles in the Air, Wonderful Baby, Vincent. You've written children's books, and, you know, I mean, I was always as well fascinated by the story of that plane crash. You know, were you huge into Buddy Holly and Ritchie Valens and the Big Bopper, or is it more of just something that happened afterwards?
No, I'm the paper boy in the song, so it's all about, you know, really, that song is biographical, it's my life, and I carried that with me for many years until I was starting to write songs, and I don't know, my life progressed. You know, I was, when that happened, it was 1959, I was 13, I never stopped thinking about it. Nobody else cared all that much about it. The song allowed a book by a man named John Goldrosen to come out, which was called The Buddy Holly Story. And he wrote me a long letter after it was published and said, you know, had it not been for your song, this book would not have come out, because I had been trying for 2 years to interest a publisher in this book, and they didn't care about a dead rock star. Nobody cared, which was surprising to me, because I did. So, you know, then Buddy Holly's Story movie was made using the book as the script, and Gary Busey and the producer or director of the Buddy Holly movie called The Buddy Holly Story, which really catapulted Buddy's legend into the stratosphere, they came to visit me, and Gary Busey said that, Don, this would never have happened without American Pie. So this whole attention, really, to the air crash as being a seminal moment in rock and roll history is certainly because it was, but in part, certainly because of the song American Pie. There's no doubt about it.
Now, you know, the Buddy Holly story, a lot of it was, you know, factually incorrect. But I had asked this question to a bunch of people that are musicians, and, you know, they have different opinions on it. Do you think, because in 1959, things were changing so much in the music world, Elvis wound up going into the army, Little Richard left to go to the church, and, you know, so many, Jerry Lee Lewis had the incident with his cousin.
Yep.
So do you think if Buddy Holly would have not been in this plane crash, what would he have been like? He wrote his own music, he produced his own music, he was getting more into that. Do you think he would have been a pioneer and somebody like, you know, like that we talk about, like Eric Clapton and Jimi Hendrix to these days? Or even a Brian, the guy that produced the Beatles, George Martin?
Well, the one thing we know about Buddy Holly was that he was the first rock and roll singer-songwriter.
Yes.
Because Elvis never wrote a song.
No.
None of those guys ever wrote any songs. And Buddy wrote almost all his songs. So he was a new breed of cat, whether or not he would have, he particularly, because there was Eddie Cochran, he was doing the same thing on a smaller level, but writing great songs, Sitting in the Balcony, 24 Flight Rock, Summertime Blues. Summertime Blues has been made a hit over and over again, so he died in a car crash,
mm-hmm.
You know. But he's not Buddy Holly. He was a unique guy, you know, Buddy Holly, in that sense. And also the Crickets, that was a template, really, for the Rolling Stones. Because, you know, the English musical community of 1950 consisted of, you know, skiffle music. You know, Lonnie Donegan and weird-ass English groups that nobody ever heard of, you know, and Tommy Steele, you know, who smiled a lot. I mean, he's a great guy and everything, but, you know, these people would turn up in movies, and the only thing we knew about England were that we had Arthur Treacher, who was a butler in every film, you know. There were no English stars. I mean, David Niven was the closest thing to a star that we had, and of course, Cary Grant, but he downplayed his English background, you know. So there were very few. We didn't really dig English stuff, you know. And then the assassination of Kennedy set the country, shattered the country. And the Beatles were the antidote. And they came over here, and they already, you know, were writing these great songs and everything. And there's always a lot of Englishness in the Beatles. You know, there's a lot of music hall. There's a lot of this skiffle in there. There's all sorts of fun stuff. And we went on a trip with them. We got away from all this pain, I think. And they really were very wonderful thing that happened to us. And because no group had ever been from England had ever been accepted by the United States audience. You know, that was, and that's my theory anyway, that the assassination had a lot to do with us embracing them, plus the fact they were fabulous, you know.
Sure. I mean, and not only is the subject of the song about the big three that passed in the plane crash, but there have been a lot of people that have come up with their own interpretations of what some of the lyrics could have been. 8 miles High, you know, maybe a reference to the Birds. Bob Dylan, I think, even said
okay,
that.
Okay, well, let me just say something about that. If I had wanted to say the King, and if I wanted the King to be Elvis, I would have said Elvis.
Yeah.
I wanted the King, there's a thorny crown. Christ wore a thorny crown. So each one of these, this is a kaleidoscopic impressionistic poem, which, you know, you can read into it what you like, but you can get something from it, which is that we're moving forward into a more, shall we say, less innocent, more satanic area. As the country, as the song moves forward, and then it kind of explodes, and in the end there's a lull, as if something bad had happened, like what happens. And I remember after the March on Washington, there'd been riots and tear gas and everything else, because we were mad, boy. We were mad at that government. We've been mad for years about this, and they would not stop. And the only thing to do was go in and just go nuts, you know. And after it was all over, there was rain coming down. It was quiet. You know, there'd been this huge outpouring of emotion and anger and everything in the afternoon. And that's what I was trying to capture in that last part of the song. Everything has happened, and it's peaceful now. So there's a lot of stuff in that song. You know, I don't like talking about, that's the reason I don't talk about the lyrics, because any one of those things in the song could be many different things. I'm doing myself a disservice by playing this game. It's not a board game. I've done a song that was written by my guitar player, and I put the melody to it, and I've recorded it called American Boys, and that's kind of like a thing that the Beach Boys did, was the guys that gave us rock and roll. Do you remember the guys that gave us rock and roll? I think it's on the Fun, Fun, Fun album, one of them. This names people, you know, Little Richard and Marty and Johnny Cash and whatever. It's a whole different kind of song. It's not American Pie. That's not what American Pie is.
I'm sure that maybe you've heard this question before, but what would be your favorite Buddy Holly song?
Not Fade Away.
And what about Richie Valens?
I love Donna.
And the Big Bopper, besides Chantilly Lace, had a couple of kitschy songs. Would you say that, what would be something besides Chantilly Lace that you liked from him?
I didn't really know anything but Chantilly Lace, but he represented the, I would say, the novelty side of the 50s music. You know, you had Buchanan and Goodman Records, From Outer Space. So those were funny. Those are great records. And, you know, Stranded in the Jungle and A Purple People Eater and... You know, there was always some funny, you know, nutty song that everybody got a kick out of that went to number one for a while. That was kind of what he represented, at least with that song.
And didn't you just back in the fall you released a another album called Playing Still Playing Favorites. Yeah, which was covers. So unfortunately, you know, everybody's gone through something with this pandemic, you know, loneliness or just maybe coming up with some new and fun ideas and work around the house. Have you come up with any more maybe songs that might be coming out later this year? I know you got a documentary coming out about American Pie. So what about another record from Don McLean?
I had my producer here for the last 4 days, and we've got 11 songs all together for a new album. And he's been working on tracks. I've been doing vocals and guitar work and stuff. And we were here. I have a little area where I do studio things and, you know, broadcasts and whatnot. And so we're ready to go. This year there will be an album from me of new songs called American Boys.
And before I let you go, as a big fan of that whole, you know, the mythos of the plane crash and the three stars, had any of their family members ever reached out to you? Or what was the coolest experience that you got out of it from somebody in that group regarding American Pie?
I got to meet everybody. I met the Crickets. I met Nicky Sullivan and his family.
Wow.
Who left the Crickets after the Chirping Crickets album. I met Donna, I met Peggy Sue, I met a Buddy's mother, I met Buddy's two brothers and his sister, I met Norman Petty,
oh, wow,
who came to my offices that my ex-manager had and gave me lead sheets to three Buddy Holly songs that have never been recorded, which I will record sometime in the near future. So, yes, I was in touch with, I knew Tommy Allstop was on both the Chain Lightning and Believers albums. And I even met the Picks. The Picks were a family of singers from, I guess they're from either Texas or New Mexico, that were the background singers on Buddy Holly's records. So, you know, if you hear That Makes Tough, Time Goes By, I'll Still Remember You, that's the Picks, and they're singing with him on all that stuff on the Chirping Crickets, because the Crickets really didn't sing. And so the Picks, and I met them, and, you know, wives and family and relatives of Richie Valens. Oh, yeah, I've had contacts from them.
I mean, that had to be just amazing.
Oh, yeah. Amazing. You know, I tell people I put myself in my own movie, which is exactly, that's the story of my life.
And who would play Don McLean in his own movie?
Well, I think if we're up to me, I like Christian Bale. He's my favorite actor, but I don't think he'd want to do that.
Hey, you know what? He's lost weight. He's gained weight. I'm sure playing Don McLean wouldn't be as drastic as having to drop 100 pounds or whatever he did for that one role. So I think that
be good. He really changed in American Hustle, didn't he? From the mechanic to the American Hustle. Oh, my God. What a job he did on himself.
Yeah, I don't think he could pay me enough to do that. I enjoy indulging every once in a while. And if somebody said I have to stop doing it and drop this, I would probably say, you get somebody else. But before I let you go, my last question for you, Don, is Surf Ballroom, that was the night, the last performance by Buddy, by the Big Bopper and Richie Valens. You've been there. What was it like for the first time walking into the Surf Ballroom and just knowing that was where it was?
That was where I met everybody, because that was this big tribute, and I sang there. This is many years ago. And if you Google me, you can see a story that focuses on the wall that's at the Surf Ballroom where I wrote the opening stanza to American Pie. And it's never been touched by anybody in all these years. They've scribbled all kinds of stuff all over the wall, but that thing that I wrote there has always stayed the same. And there's a story about it. One fellow wrote his name and accidentally the pen went over into the area where I had written that. My life is based on instinct and happenstance, events that have occurred. I have never been able to organize or engineer anything to happen the way I wanted it to. And so many things have happened way better than I could ever have imagined because I let it happen. And I just really wasn't there trying to push stuff.
Well, I thank you so much for your time. It's been interesting. You know, there's so many other questions I would want to ask, but I'm sure you have other things to do. And
well, thank you. And you're a very obviously knowledgeable person. So we'll talk again sometime.
Appreciate your time, Don. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, thank you.
Take care, buddy.